is a holiday that is naturally defined by not knowing things, by transcending knowledge. The Hebrew expression for it is Ad Delay Yada, which means to reach a point of intoxication where you are beyond knowledge. But we'll get to that a little bit. I believe that, especially with recent events in the world, beginning with September 11th and the general crisis in the Middle East, including Iraq, age-old Babylon and Persia, frankly, it's made my job a lot easier because people are intrigued by biblical ideas. A few years ago, mentioned Purim, unless you were someone who's celebrating the holiday or is intrigued by it, most people weren't interested in it. Same with other biblical and Torah truths. Today, it's on people's mind. That doesn't mean many know about what it really means. However, once you have things, once there's a certain cognition, it makes the discussion much more compelling. Because the immediate question is, Purim, the events of Purim happened approximately 2,500 years ago, a little less, in ancient Persia, which was then a superpower. And still today, after 2,500 years, close to 2,500 years, Jews are celebrating in a almost unbridled festivity, Purim, not only here in New York, but all across the world, including Israel, and so on. What is it that keeps an event alive and so fresh for thousands and thousands of years? Always intrigued me as a child, growing up with it. And today I know it intrigues many people because, as I said, these biblical ancient events are on people's minds. So to begin with, I think the most important thing is just to lay out what exactly is Purim, what does the word mean, and the truth is, what is its eternal and powerful message that we should be sitting here, wherever we may be? Why is it so vital and relevant to our lives that we should spend the time to even discuss it, let alone to celebrate it? So, Purim was documented in a book called Megillat Esther. Not all events in Jewish history are documented quite. For instance, the story of Hanukkah doesn't have a document that's formal. There is a document, but it never was formalized. Purim, it formalized in a book called the Book of Esther, or Megillat Esther, which tells the story. One of the obligations on Purim Eve and Purim Day to hear and read this story. Briefly, the story begins with a king called Ahasuerus, who was then the Persian emperor, and he ruled over 127 countries. Essentially the entire Middle East, Northern Africa, and Southern Europe, stretching all the way to India and perhaps a little more to the east. That's the geography of it. That was essentially the cradle of civilization at the time. And the story continues how he throws a party. The party evolves into a stag party, somewhat. And he summons his wife Vashti to show her off. She refuses to show up, humiliated. The king decides to kill her, and does kill her. And then, of course, he needs a new queen, so the story continues and elaborates in an almost comical way the details of how the women in the nation, the best and the most beautiful, were all nominated. And finally, it is Esther who hides her identity as a Jew at the instructions of her uncle, which is the predominant opinion that she, the uncle or uncle Mordecai, tells her to hide her identity, and she becomes his queen. Simultaneously, King Ahasuerus is a conspiracy against him. Mordecai overhears the conspiracy and foils a plot to assassinate him. The story continues with another character called Haman. Haman is essentially the defense minister, or the top minister in the Ahasuerus' cabinet. And Haman rises to power, a rabid anti-Semite. He insists that everybody bow to him. Mordechai refuses to bow. Mordechai was also one of the advisors to the king. And then begins a cycle that would lead to a Holocaust plot of genocide. Haman finally decides and convinces King Ahasuerus to kill all the Jews at a designated day, which would be in the month of Adar. He throws lots. That was his way. He was somewhat of a sorcerer as well. He believed in some type of lots. He threw lots and fell in the month of Adar. Hence the name Purim, by the way. We'll get back to that later. Purim in Persian means lots. So everybody's lined up. Esther is the queen. Mordechai is behind the scenes. When the plot is heard about, is uncovered, becomes a day of mourning and grief. Esther doesn't know what to do. Mordechai tells her that this is the reason, perhaps, that you came to power, and they decide that they have to go into 3 days of prayer and fasting. The story continues how Esther finally, after one meal and another meal, finally convinces the king and tells him that there's someone plotting to kill me and my people. Who is this person? Haman. The story has more details, but bottom line is that Haman ends up being killed by the king, and the plot is overturned, and that turns into called the miracle, the festival of Purim. And the Megillah concludes with an elaborate discussion how Esther and Mordechai ask the Sanhedrin, the Jewish court of law, to designate this day as a holiday that should be celebrated year after year after year. This is the nutshell of the story. I mean, you wonder immediately, is this the only time that the Jews were at the brink of disaster? And why suddenly, at this time, does it become a holiday up there with the not that many holidays that we have? The holidays that Jews have are Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot are the biblical holidays. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we know about. Chanukah. And Purim. Besides that, there are no other holidays. There are different commemorative days, but this is the holiday. So what's about this event that makes it so unique? Question number one. Question number two is this. What's the miracle here? Everybody seemed to be lined up in the right place at the right time. Nothing happened. Miraculous, seemingly. Exodus from Egypt. The Bible documents miracle after miracle. The 10 plagues, parting of the sea, the whole story. Even Hanukkah is a miracle. There was enough oil only for one day. It burned for 8 days. Here, Esther was the queen of Ahasuerus. So she was able to persuade him to change his mind. Big thing. Well, as usual, to understand the significance of any Jewish event, you have to turn to the soul and mystical dimension. Or else, you're left with many, many more questions than answers, and many, many seemingly superficial elements. And this gets to the real issue of our relationship with God, our relationship with ourselves. The Baal Shem Tov says the following statement. The Talmud says that if you read the Megillah backwards, it's not considered as if you had read the Megillah. You have to read it frontwards. Now, those of you familiar with Talmud may know that this isn't a strange statement, but listen, frankly, who would want to read the Megillah backwards? Why would the Talmud even consider such an option? Some people do open up the end of a book first, just to see the ending, but they don't necessarily read it backwards. Then they go back to the beginning. So the Baal Shem Tov deciphers this in a very practical way. He says, if somebody reads the Megillah backwards, as if it happened back then, not something that's being recreated and relived today, they did not experience. It's not a story that happened, which is backwards. And essentially, when you do read here, when you think of a story that once happened, like a fairy tale or a true story, as if it was an event in the past, we do. When we see an event as an event in the past, it's as if we read it backwards. Because in time, what's the last event that happened, the last thing in the story? And then you go, you work your way backwards. Whereas if you're experiencing it now, you're experiencing it frontwards. I think it was Kierkegaard that said that life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived frontwards. Well, Purim, as Baal Shem Tov says, must be recreated in our lives. This parallels a statement from the Arizal, another great mystic, perhaps the greatest. And the verse in the Megillah, it says, Hayomim ha'elo niskarim v'nasim. These days should be remembered and should be implemented. In Hebrew, niskarim means to remember and nasim means to be implemented. So the Arizal asked the question, what are these two words? Either remembered or be implemented. What is the meaning of these two? And he says the following. And with this he introduces a concept that revolutionized how we look at time. He said that time is a cycle. We don't just remember events in the past. They actually are recreated at a certain point in the cycle. In other words, time is not linear. Niskarim, as we remember them, we recreate them. And that's the emphasis in the Megillah. And that's why Esther and Mordechai used particularly that expression, that it shall be recreated. Now, there are events in history that are not recreated. Something about Purim that makes it powerful enough to be recreated in our lives. That's what they wanted, and that's what they requested. Similar to the story about King David, the Book of Psalms. Why did the Book of Psalms achieve such prominence that it became the book that people in need always turned to? A book that men and women throughout history used the words of the Psalms to cry out. It's true, this is King David's prayers and song to God. But why did it become one of ours? There are many prayers in the Torah. So the Medrash says that King David turned to God and said to him, "Yihil l'rotzon imrei fi, may it be your will that my words that I sang through my life to you, that I cried to you, should become the words that generations will always use this language to speak to you." And God considered his request and then granted it. He infused King David's words with a certain eternal power that whoever was ever in need, when they would use those words, it would access a part of your soul and God in a way that no other words can do. That's the power of words. Which incidentally is the reason why in Judaism, using certain words in prayer, even if you don't know Hebrew or you don't know Persian, so why read the Megillah in that language or in Hebrew or Persian if you don't understand it anyway? Because there's a power to words. It's like music. Musical notes, these are the notes. You want explanation? There are books that translate it. But the power of the original notes are never tampered with. So there's something about the power of the original language. The same is with the Megillah and the story of Purim, that Mordechai and Esther beseeched and asked God to turn this into a force that would become something that would be recreated in our lives. That's what Arizal and the Baal Shem Tov say briefly with my elaboration here. Now the question, of course, is what is this event? And what is its recreation? And that will open up the secret and the door to what its relevance, of course, is to our lives. So it's about identifying in our own personal experiences, in our own personal dilemmas, in our own personal situation, identifying the patterns that parallel with Purim. And then looking into the Megillah and into Purim and gleaning from it the tools with which we can then address that particular dilemma. So the truth is that there's so much to say about it. So I will try to cover, in answering this question, some general principles and break it down to some specifics. So let's start with the name itself, Purim. The name, or an odd name to give a holiday. Lots. If you called it Mordechai, you call it Esther, you call it salvation. You know, Pesach means jumping over, leaping over, referring to God leaping over the doors of the Jews as he struck the Egyptians. It could also imply redemption and freedom. But what is Lots? Canaan through Lots. It fell out in the month of Adar, and suddenly that becomes the name of a holiday. So here's what the Tikkuni Zohar says. Tikkuni Zohar is a volume, an extension of the Zohar, the classical Kabbalistic work of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Says the word Purim has a similarity to another word called Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippur, its full name is Yom Kippurim. Sounds oddly similar to Purim. And the Zohar says, the Tikkuni Zohar says a very strange thing. In Hebrew, when you say something is Kippurim, it means like Purim, similar to Purim. Which basically implies that Purim is greater than Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippurim is only compared to Purim. It doesn't get weirder than that. Yom Kippur is the holiest day of the calendar. It's a day when we enter the Holy of Holies. It's in the Bible, it's in the Torah itself. Purim came years later. How can you compare Yom Kippur to Purim? So Kabbalistic and Hasidic texts explain the similarity that both are connected to lots. On Yom Kippur there were also lots thrown. Hence Kippur. What were the lots on Yom Kippur? The lots of Yom Kippur was that when Yom Kippur also means, the technical definition of Kippur means atonement, atoning for our transgressions, for our sins.